Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat. Hello, folks. Before we jump in our next episode, want to make sure you are aware of our next event, July 31st at City Central North Dallas. We are happy to welcome Ellen Sundra. She is the VP of Systems Engineering at Forescout. And how awesome is Ellen? She's flying in from Washington, D.C. for this event, Aaron. So you can check us out on Eventbrite or go to our innovationcalling.com Women in Tech Leadership page and sign up there.
Yeah, so speaking of that, it's kind of the perfect transition into this episode, because this episode was our last live podcasting event for our Women in Tech Leadership series. It was with
Gwen Throckmorton, Head of Industry Global Sales at Facebook.
This one was awesome. So typically we'll cover a lot about their journey. We covered a little bit about that, but there was, oh my gosh, I was devastated when 45 minutes went up on this thing. Because I didn't want to stop talking. We were talking about leadership. We were talking about her journey, culture. I mean, just the insight on culture, taking control of your own career, questions to ask. And then we got into the whole media conversation too. Like, it was, I was sad when it ended, but this was a really good one.
Yeah, no, poor Gwen was very gracious because she saw the look in our eyes. We're like, can we continue? And she's like, time's up.
Yeah, yeah. No, we had a whole 30-minute Q&A even after that, too. So
that we had to shut down.
That we had to shut down. So she was amazing. We hope you enjoyed this episode, because I'm telling you, people are still buzzing about it days after it. So without further ado, here is our recording with Gwen Throckmorton of Facebook. All right. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
And we're back for another live recording of our Women in Technology series. We got a big one. It's July. We've been talking about this for probably 6 months now. Not quite, but it feels like it. But we have Gwen Throckmorton here. So Sia, I'm going to let you do some introductions.
So instead of the huge long title we've been talking about for the last 3 months, Gwen is the head of industry at Facebook. I just screwed that up already. Head of industry, but emerging entertainment. And I think it's a habit now at this point. But Gwen, thank you so much for coming and joining us.
And can we all welcome Gwen here?
Thank you. Woo! Thank you very much.
I'm laughing at some of the courtesy laughs because a lot of people have wine in their hands. Oh. So I think we do need to make a comment. If there is a rambling of thunder that you hear, it's because we're awesome. Right, guys? Yes. And thank you for making it safely into our crowds here. It's a... Exactly.
God's
exactly.
Excited about Facebook, too. What can I say?
Amazing.
All right, so let's jump into here. Gwen, are you ready?
I'm so ready.
We're going to have 20 questions for you.
20 questions.
Not really.
No.
I don't even think I have 20 questions listed on here. So you're
whatever
lucky.
You
We're going to talk candidly, or just conversation.
Okay.
So, as always with all things, you came from somewhere.
Yep.
We're going to go back in time. Mm. We're not going to go back too far in time, yep. Unless you want to talk about swinging when you were a kid, but that's okay. but your earlier life, I would say post-college, let's start there.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Help me understand exactly what you graduated with and what you ended up getting your first opportunity is not necessarily directly correlated.
Not at all. It was a very alarming experience because I graduated with a radio, TV, film degree and a minor in business, and was just convinced that I was going to be the next huge film director. And so I moved to Los Angeles and like slept on a friend's couch for months to just try and get work, and found that it didn't matter that I graduated with honors. No one even really cared that I graduated at that point. They just cared about who I know and what I could do. And so I just started getting work wherever I could. And I got a job on a soap opera, which doesn't even exist anymore, as most of them don't. It was called Port Charles. And I was literally fetching coffee, making copies, whatever it was, but I was in the entertainment business, right? And that's all that mattered. And then from there, I went to work for some directors and producers, and it just led me to my first big gig at a division of Sony at the time, which was called Columbia TriStar, and then it just kind of went from there. And when I think about the glue that kind of connects it all, I was telling someone earlier this, is I have always been so blessed to find myself at companies or on teams that were trying to do some kind of disruption. And so when I came to Sony, they were really trying to take cable to the next level where it wasn't just reruns and talk shows, but they started making really quality content and attracting really good talent to do so. And then when I went to Time Warner Cable, they were trying to take what was a traditional sales organization and make them digital and bring some of their digital assets to go and coincide with their TV spot sales. And then when I came to Facebook 6 years ago, actually this week, I was telling somebody I've been there longer than 96% of the company, which just tells you how fast they have grown. So when I came to Facebook, I came on a team for a category of entertainment, which was a passion of mine, but on Facebook was very, very small compared to some of the other categories that were advertising on the platform. And obviously as the company's as the platform changed itself and as video became such a core part, entertainment became just a natural fit, and it just exploded from there. So I've always been very blessed to have that kind of disruption at the heart of my career, even though I'm like the most change averse person in the world.
Well, how does that work exactly? So you're at Sony and you're there. I mean, you're probably not thinking I'm going to go find something that's getting disrupted and go in and find it. So how does that land? Like, does it fall in your lap? Do you see an opportunity and you raise your hand and you're like, I think that would be really cool to try. I mean, how did you insert your A, find them, and then B, insert yourself?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm telling you this now at 44, looking back at my life. I didn't at 21 look at my life and say, I'm going to be at a place that disrupts.
Right.
It just kind of happened that way. And so now I have the benefit of hindsight. But I think when I look at what connected me either to opportunities or to people, there was something in them that had a little bit of a fire in the belly or were trying to do something different. And when I had my choice, I mean, in the beginning, right, you're just trying to work. But when I had my choice, that was always what I was being drawn to, is something that was going to kind of make me inherently wake up slightly uncomfortable, because that's when you know you're growing, right? And that's when you know you're doing something that, if nothing else, is going to teach you something. And let's face it, I believe a lot of the choices in life, and certainly a lot of the jobs that I didn't talk about, a lot of the internships I had taught me more. The things that were not a fit taught me more than the things that were. In the, you know, if you really, you know, I like to tell my kids, mistakes aren't mistakes unless you refuse to learn from them. And I think that's the same with careers. Like, there's no job that's bad if you can really understand what you learned from it and why it did or didn't work and what you want to do better next.
Yeah, I wish I would have figured that out at 21.
It took 44 years. Oh. So.
Yeah, I think everyone in this room is pretty much looking at each other like, oh yeah, 21. And in the 90s for a certain age group, pre-internet.
Yay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you kind of just skipped over a little bit that.
Yeah, sorry.
If you don't mind though, and I get you.
Take me back.
Can we go back?
Yep.
So when you were, you know, schlepping, getting coffee and all that good stuff, right? And it was non-paid, right? It was an internship, right?
I just literally showed up and said, I had a professor from college that just got me in as just like a free production assistant. Wow. And like, I didn't care.
You know, because I don't know anything about Hollywood or the entertainment industry. So is production assistant a generic term of anything that people want it to be? Or is it a very distinctive?
It basically means that any of the staff can tell you what to do. Basically. I mean, there are officially productions. I don't want to downplay the whole category, but basically it was, if the producers or the writing staff or anybody needed anything, they had a series of people that were at their fingertips to go and do whatever it took.
So being the lackey, for lack of
a
better term.
That's what it was. Yeah.
What did it teach you?
Oh, man.
Did you want another glass of wine for that answer?
No, I mean, I haven't even had any. I probably need to start. I think in this case, what it taught me is all the details that go into pulling something like that off. I mean, it's like, it seems so obvious, but I mean, you know, every time they would change the script, you had to go back and change them and get the cut and the new lines to the actors. And then you had to go and make sure that it was, you know, on cards, because sometimes they would have some actors that needed prompts. And then there's just all these levels. And it made me so in love even more with the industry than what I understood from a kid watching, like, you know, Big with Tom Hanks and thinking I wanted to be Penny Marshall. Like, Hollywood is amazing. And like, what you see, the content and the level of effort, it takes a village. And I think being a part of that was just something that I just naturally felt drawn to and wanted more of. And then the other thing is, and I was telling someone this earlier, is like, the thing they don't teach you in college is how to be a professional, right? I mean, luckily I didn't know any of the actors or anything, so I wasn't starstruck, but like I was starstruck by just the whole experience. And so I was showing up like a kid at a concert, you know, like following an act, like, and it took someone pulling me aside and saying, hey, act like you work here. Because
So you just got my next question was, who guided you during this time? Or did you find him, or did they find you to guide you?
I think throughout my career and my life, it's been a little bit of both, but there's always, there's always someone that's willing to give your opinion. The question is an opinion that is going to be beneficial and valuable to you and like that you should actually take in. But in this case, I had one of the members of the writing staff who was the one that actually helped me get in there. And she just kind of gave me, you know, they say feedback's a gift or a bag of snakes. In this case, it was a feedback was a gift. And she just kind of said, hey, Gwen, I appreciate the enthusiasm, but like, you know, it's just like a boss that told me, you always want to dress for the next position. You like want to show up in a way that people see you at the level that you want to be, you know? And so I was just kind of being too much like a fan of it instead of acting like I actually belonged on the staff. And so I just kind of had to dial it back a notch. Yeah.
I want to keep going on this, but in my head, because I know nothing about the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. Do you have any juicy stories to tell us?
No, I am not.
Poor Charles. Wasn't Rick Springfield on that? Or
not when I was there. I'm not that old. But no, I mean, listen, I can tell you.
Don't date me. I see you guys laughing. Okay,
no,
I'm sorry, Gwen.
You're not any older than I am. So I have some stories from my days at Sony for sure. But I am sure as heck not going to talk about them here.
Okay, but as far as like from a production level and content creation from the 80s to now, like as far as like, is there a big difference from
the 90s to now?
90s, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah. You know what? I'm such a big fan of the 80s, like music saying, and stuff. No, like I know we're the same age. I don't know why I'm doing this.
No.
But you know, we were fiddling with the mics earlier, for example.
Yes.
Like it's still the same, right?
Well, everything's a lot smaller and more portable, definitely, than it was. I mean, listen, when I was interning at news stations in Fort Worth when I went to Texas Christian, like, I was still in editing booths where you literally had to cut almost literally. And now everything's digital, and like Avid came out at that time, and like I learned that at the end of my college, but like everything can happen so much faster now. And you know, we were talking earlier about someone was telling me they're in graphic design, like how quickly you can change things. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, just, it's just everything moves at such a different pace, which is good. But then sometimes I think what happens is in the space where things have to breathe, that's also sometimes where different inspiration comes. And when you can move too fast, sometimes I think you jump to do things before you actually think about what's possible. So I like to call it, you don't stay in open mode very long because you can move very fast. And so I think we move to action a lot faster now, which loses some of the art in it, in the process. But even so, it's just amazing what they can do and how fast movies can get shot now and how much, you know, productions can come out and the different formats. And I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I was just listening to this, and they were talking about content from a sense of when we grew up, like, remember those like big movies we'd wait and we'd go to the theater, and now it's just content's coming at us from every angle that it's nothing special about anymore. It's like, yeah, I'll just watch it on Netflix. Like we're getting movies or whatever it is. And it's changing from a perspective of that where I know I'm digressing a bit, but it's just
not
interesting
digressing.
How
you're
it's
fast
changing.
Forwarding our art.
I know.
Here,
sorry. Okay, well, sorry.
Like, I'm kind of like, I'm like, oh, God, I'm cute.
I know. You're like,
okay, like next, you can't all look.
Right. I can't read that.
But we can go back to roles and career before we jump into the changing world. We watched a video where you talk about people interacting with other roles within companies and how important it is to understand your role and interact with roles. For someone looking, I know there's a lot of people in here looking to advance a career, looking to grow. What do you mean by that? Do you know what interview I'm talking about? It was a recent one.
I was really racking my brain for a second. I don't know.
I can't remember which. It was
no,
a career
no.
one.
Why do you suggest people should think of how their jobs interact with other roles?
I said that.
Yeah, you did. And you did a very amazing job. It was really good. It was on the Vimeo interview with job thingy. It's for college kids.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Man, you guys did stalk me big time. I had totally forgotten about that.
I have no.
Can you give
time
me a little more context? Because I kind of remember it, but I just I'm sure it was very profound.
Yeah, it was, and it was, and you nailed it too. And I was kind of hoping you nailed it. No,
I did that in one take, by the way.
Oh, did you
in the morning too?
We can edit this too. All right, don't worry about it. All right, so I'll preface it then for you, which is we were talking about career development and career growth, and when you're looking at your own position, how do you help yourself breach or not breach, but how do you self grow in that role, right?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I find most the younger people that I work with that are earlier in their careers, they think of everything very much in black and white boxes of this is my role, this is my job description, and that is my box, and this is what I'm going to do. But in, you know, not to borrow from like a Kevin Bacon analogy, but like everything connects, right? And so the people that I see go from good to great faster are the people that are trying to say, okay, well, if my role does this, and this is what is most important to me to be successful, and then this person next to me, like the best question when I meet a stakeholder, especially one that maybe isn't necessarily gold on the same thing as I am, like say if I work with someone on my on the creative team, but they don't roll up to my team, is for me to ask them what's important to you. And at the end of the day, how is performance judged for you? And when you actually show someone that you care about how their job is deemed successful and not what can you do for me, and you start connecting those dots, that's when people will lean in and you can get so much more successful, because your brand and your business starts becoming about how you want to be somebody who amplifies everybody around you rather than someone who just drives for their own gain. And I think that's something that they just don't teach, because it's all about what do you have to do? What is X plus Y equals Z? And that's not the way the world works. And it's certainly not the way big companies or multifaceted, kind of heavily cross-functionally reliant teams work. You have to know ultimately what matters to the person to the right and the left of you and up and down and all around. So,
okay. So I can't help but
think. Was that what I was talking about, by the way? Because I just totally pulled that up.
Yes. I think businesses and corporations in this day and age, and I'm totally going off script here, Erin. I know she's going to freak out on me.
I'd rather go off script. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, I know. I think there is changing in the dynamics within organizations, where there used to be a siloed approach on things. Mm-hmm. What all the companies that you've worked with and our own personal experiences, do you feel that the more successful businesses in the future as we go forward with Gen Z, who's in the audience, and I don't know if they're listening or not, which is why I was looking around, their experience in working at a major corporation, is it going to be the same as what we're experiencing now? And we're Gen Xers, right? So do you think companies like Facebook, Sony, Warner, whatever, are evolving to accommodate that change in the business?
Not fast enough. I mean, even down to, I mean, you look at the space we're in here, you know, the environments look very different now. And when I came to Facebook, I could not believe that everything, even down to even where Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl sit, nobody sits in an office. It's all open environment. There's conference rooms everywhere, but it is about a spirit of collaboration, open workforces. And I was like, in the corner talking on my phone like this, because I was so used to having my nice little box of an office and it had my identity to it and I type, but I also was cut off, and you lose that community and that connection and that collaboration. Those are three C's, right? But I think that's what's happening in society, which is why you see platforms like Facebook, Instagram, whatever exploding. People want to come closer together and they know that there's a multiplier effect that happens. And I think companies need to figure out what that looks like for their workforce, where they can be efficient and effective, but not bring people apart, find ways to bring them more together and to build environments that produce that. And it took a while for me to get used to it, but now I can't imagine working in an office, like with a door. Like I just can't. And it's better for me because it gets me thinking, and just, it forces me to think about, once again, everything around me rather than thinking about what's on my computer screen, you know, and only that. So I think if companies are going to keep up, they have to embrace a dynamic, more connected instinct that people have, and find a way to foster that in a way that builds the most productivity possible. But that's just my two cents.
How do you think that fits in, though, in a world where people want more flexibility? They want to work from home more. They want to do more. Yeah. Like, do you think that... How does that dynamic work if you need more of that community, but people kind of want more flexibility too?
You know, I think what's funny is, and I mean, I'm one of those people, I have the benefit of oftentimes being able to choose to work from home, but I oftentimes, a lot of times, some don't want to, because there is that energy that, you know, and I know not everybody's like that, and certain roles are easier to, you know, it's, I think there needs to be flexibility, but I find, when I talk to most people that they still want something to have identity and connection with. So even if you, have a predominant workforce that does have the flexibility to work from home, are there moments in time where you still can bring them together and help them have something tangibly to buy into and to touch? I think it's impossible to have culture if your entire organization is working in silos. I just think that's a very difficult thing. And I think for companies to truly succeed, and when I think about the partners that I work with and some of the ones that retain employees the most, a mission statement is more than what's just a piece of paper on a wall. It's something that is lived and breathed and felt. And it doesn't mean that it's perfect, but it means that it's a core part of why people come to work every day. So
on that note, as you manage a team, mm-hmm. and they are distributed, right?
Yes.
And they may or may not have an office to go to, or do they?
They do.
They do. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you encourage your team members to be in that office, or if they want that flexibility, work from home? Because they're all sales and marketing folks, right?
And they're on the road a lot. So I don't know if you're going to ask me about this question later, so I don't want to.
I'm not going jump. In anything other than, I mean, with what you're talking about with the camaraderie and the communication, I mean, with your team.
The quick answer is yes, I encourage them to be there as much as possible, because you don't come to work at Facebook to then not be part of the very culture.
Essence of,
and like
Facebook.
Everything there, especially our work around diversity and a lot of the groups that we have, it's all about being there, knowing people that are from outside your individual team and whatever. So I just think, so yes, I encourage them. And I also think there's benefit to being around other people that are doing the same job as you, and being able to look to the right and say, I got this challenge and I can't get my head around figuring out how to get through it. And that person says, oh, I had that too. Here's how I did. It doesn't happen as much as it can and need to when you're not in the office. That said, one of the questions I always ask anybody when they come to my team is I ask them to rank what's important to them. And there's five things that people generally stay at a company or come to a company for. And so I say, what, they're all important, but I need you to rank 1 through 5 for me. It's first one is who you work for. So your manager, who you work with, your team, how much money you make. I am in sales, right? So you got to ask that question. How you're allowed to work. So that's where the autonomy, the flexibility comes in. And then the other one is the impact that you can have. And they rank those for me, and they all struggle. Very few people tell me money first, but a couple do. But either way, it tells me a lot about them. And the conversation that comes from that understands how much flexibility do they need. And by the way, I ask that question as it goes on, because if they get married, if they have kids, that question, that answer to that question is going to change. Like, yeah. It's changed for me 5 million times since I've been at Facebook. And so understanding what's core to happiness and satisfaction is critical to having like your best performing workforce. So.
I think that's so innovative what you're just saying right there, right? I think that mentality is different than what we have seen traditionally in our careers, right? I mean, it's, okay, raise of hand here. How many people have had their managers, I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs, but how many have actually asked, hey, what's going to make you happy when you're in an interview, right? Businesses don't, yeah right, but businesses don't seem to care about the happiness quotient, if you will, which is esoteric if you think about it, right? Yeah. It's intangible, but it's something that's so critical for productivity, so critical for innovation, so critical for collaboration, the sense of community, to stay loyal to your business and company.
Well, can we dig into there? I want to just ask too about Facebook, because to that point, to your point of the open concept, they have built extremely quickly. But you said you go to Facebook, you know, you would go to Facebook. How, you've given some great examples. Any other things that you can look at to say, this is how they've kept their culture so amazing, even through all this growth, because they've done it well. They've had to have done it well. I mean, you've been there for 6 years, you know, any other things that they've done to really maintain that culture and keep it even throughout various offices, growth, all of it?
I mean, there's a lot of things. I think some are down to literally continuing to instill the principles of the company, you know, move fast. I'm totally blanking. Build social value. Like there's all these principles, and they continue to reinforce them. It's actually tied to our performance. in terms of how we continue to contribute, not just to our job descriptions, but to the greater culture and the community that we're trying to build. It's little things like literally when you go to a Facebook office, it's much like this in that it's not finished. And the whole idea is that there's signs everywhere that say 1% finished. And the idea is that we are just getting started and we don't want anybody to get complacent. That's why if you go to the Facebook headquarters, they have still kept the sign that was for Sun Microsystems and they just flipped it around and put the Facebook logo on the other side because they want people to remember that that's how quickly you can become irrelevant.
Wow.
And no, most people don't see it because they're just out in front taking pictures with the thumbs. But like if you turn around, you look at it on the other side, it's the Sun Microsystems side. And there's posters everywhere and everyone is encouraged to have a voice. And I think the other thing is leadership, no matter how big we've gotten, has not changed that they show up for a Q&A every week for the employees. Like Mark, he has to be, even if he's sick, he will do them like from
remote if he needs to.
And I think accessibility and transparency are huge in how we've kept the culture and just calling things out. And it's not perfect and they would tell you it's not, but I think when you just decide that you are a company that wants to have and hire people who come to do more than a job, then you yourself need to bring your whole authentic self. And that's what we talk about. And so that means, and my partner's here, she would laugh because she says this all the time. It's like, did someone cry again? I get a lot of people who cry, right? Because when you bring your authentic self, guess what? And guess what? I cry more than I ever have now. And I wasn't a hugger before, but now I'm a hugger since I came to Facebook. And it's like, when you bring your authentic self, that means you don't get to shelve the parts of you when you leave work. And I think there's amazing things that when used correctly, people will do because they feel like they're not having to leave part of themselves there and they can connect to something that has social value, which is the foundation of our whole platform. And that's why I think as we've continued to grow, we've been able to keep that secret sauce. But that's, you know, my two cents.
No, that's really interesting. Kind of very anti mini core. I mean, I remember the first time I ever had to cry, I just like sat in my car and I didn't want anybody to see me. I didn't want, like, I was just, but yeah.
And I
want to
be clear. Let me correct myself.
They don't
myself.
Encourage crying.
They're not crying. I'm not saying that we encourage crying. And I'm not saying they were crying because they were emotional about something that happened. But like, I remember at old jobs, if I would have ever gotten that upset, and certainly with some of my more traditional company bosses, they would have been like,
especially,
shut that down right now.
Yeah,
right?
Especially being a woman. Like,
yes,
yeah.
Right,
girl,
exactly.
You tread on areas we try not to talk about, which is women in business yet. We're not there yet.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Does she want us to? No, but actually, before we go into that, I do have a quote from you, and I just like it. Okay.
Oh boy. Okay.
So you talk about bringing your authentic self.
Yep.
And this is so funny because people are laughing the way I'm pushing this thing out so I can read it. You had said this before in interviews. What does heart and head as a leader mean? And explain that to us, please.
Sure. So the best managers I have ever had, the best leaders I've ever been around are ones that balance how to use both their heart and the head. You can be the smartest person in the world, but if you don't have any EQ or you don't have an ability to connect to people on a heart level, you're only going to be able to take that so far. I believe that the best way to be successful and to have a full life and a full career is to understand that you can bring both and still be, you can take your star as far as it you want. And so when I have an opportunity, I try to be real and to admit, you know, if there's a moment that I'm a hot mess or whatever it is, because I think people want authenticity at the end of the day. They don't want people who are perfect. They want people who have purpose and passion and aren't afraid to show that. And that doesn't come without being able to balance both heart and head.
It's an interesting line. Do you find it? Like, I know, like, even with transparency, vulnerability is the hot topic right now. Is there a line, like, as a leader too, like how much don't be their friend, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's a very fair point. And I think vulnerability can often get confused with weakness or, you know, something that should be, is like secretive that you're suddenly dumping on someone. I think vulnerability is, once again, I think at least in this case is what I'm talking about, is you're going to be your authentic self. If I go in, and I certainly can't do this in my role because I work with people who are far smarter than me, but if I go in and act like I have all the answers or I am so above it all that I don't take the time to just sit and have a really honest conversation with somebody, because in that moment I can tell that they're struggling because of something at home, then I don't see how I can ask them to do things that are really hard, right? And resiliency is something that you cannot teach, but is so essential, especially if you want to drive a high performing sales team. And so, you know, I'm probably the poster child for crossing lines of head and heart on the heart side. I do wear my heart on my sleeve. I have a horrible poker face. But at the same time, I do believe because of the way that I show up and the way that I give a little bit more than I take, that is one of the reasons why I've been able to keep my staff and to have them be able to do the things that they have, which is to grow our business at an unbelievable rate, despite, you know, a lot of opportunities where we could have gone the other way.
I think you're making me cry, because as a former sales professional,
I don't do that. Remember, I don't.
I know. What's wrong with you? Because I don't even cry. My friends know. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Right.
But you are hitting you're hitting a vein on me here on that one, is because I've been in tech sales and I've had many bosses who are like, get it done, just show up, go faster. So what you're saying is in this very competitive world that we're in technology, you're telling your team, look, be your authentic self. It may show vulnerability. That's very counterintuitive to all sales training, more or less, that as a Gen Xer we've ever had, is you should show nothing but confidence, borderline arrogance. To do.
But once again, it doesn't have to be a weakness. Like, vulnerability can just be, you know what, I'm just having a hard day because I just had a really tough conversation. And right now the story I'm telling myself, I sound like Brene Brown, but the story I'm telling myself is that person thinks I'm an idiot. And I'm like, you know what, that did sound kind of stupid, but so what do we do about it? Like, I just think if you don't own it, right? I mean, just own the elephant in the room. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, there's just nothing to be gained by having to force fit yourself into something that doesn't feel real or in line with your values and where you are in that moment. Now, let me be very clear. I can be an absolute toughie, right? I didn't get that nickname in college for nothing. And I do ask my team for a lot. But at the same time, if you hire the right people and you have a plan and a strategy that has the right balance of accountability and support, you shouldn't have to make them be robots, because you have built the team that is set up to be able to understand when to take their foot off on the gas and when to be able to put it on. And sometimes you need them to put on the foot on the gas and they don't have, you know, the strength to do so. But then that's when you should have built the team around them, where you have people who aren't looking in boxes or silos, and you say, you know what, man down, I need somebody to jump in and help a brother out.
So on that note, on helping a brother out or sister out,
yes, sir.
If your team does not appreciate the effort that you do, have them talk to me, because hearing you say that, it's actually really thrilling, because businesses, people quit companies not because of the company itself or the job. They often quit because of the manager. Mm. And it sounds like to me you're setting a great environment to work in. It's highly competitive, what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you are high-profile entertainment brands, and they're looking at leveraging social media as their mechanism for marketing, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. So basically what I do is me and my team work with all these brands, from Netflix to Spotify to New York Times, the NBA, and how to figure out how to bring Facebook and Instagram, WhatsApp, whatever, to accomplish their marketing objectives. So, you know, whether that be to try and drive a subscription, drive a view, sell a ticket, whatever it is. And so you're asking them to do big things and on a very big stage. And so that's why I believe that you need to have more humanity in it than ever, because you're asking someone to do something that is inherently hard, and they're surrounded by people who are all A-list students too. That requires a certain amount of care.
Patience.
That I don't have. I was gonna
hope you like fib a little bit. You've been very candid tonight. So... Well, so okay, so let's shift it over to the digital then.
Yeah, let's go to digital, because I want to make sure we cover this topic too.
I know Aaron's like giving me the eyeball. No, like, girl, we gotta keep time.
And I know, like, I know everybody wants to talk about this. So let's go into digital media. Let's talk about generally what's going on in media right now, just on a general perspective. the 20 million foot view?
I mean, I think no surprise to anybody, it's incredibly fragmented. The traditional, there's no one size fits all approach. There's no mass media that you can just get everything you need. Audiences are incredibly fragmented. Options are just, consumers are in control. So they have countless choices for what they can buy, where they can buy it, what they can watch. And it takes a tremendous amount of relevancy and customization to break through what is a lot of clutter. It's also incredibly difficult, I think, for buyers right now because there's so many choices, so many different kinds of ways that feel out of their control because of machine learning and algorithms and all this kind of stuff. And so they're trying to make sense of all this. And everyone's using slightly different forms of measurement. So it's like the old adage of like, I know half of my marketing budget works. I just don't know what half is, yeah. Is kind of what I think how a lot of people feel. And so, you know, it can be incredibly confusing. And I think at the end of the day, what I've seen, especially in the last year, as competition heats up, as consolidation happens, and certainly in my space, there's a ton of consolidation. I think people have become a little cautious. And when you become cautious, that's when you can become, not on the bleeding edge, which is how a lot of the companies that have succeeded, you know, have done so, right? They've been willing to take risks. And I think right now it's somewhat of an environment that is hard because, people are just so needing to make sure every dollar counts in a world where it's sometimes hard to know even where the dollars are going.
So I think what you said there, so there's a video out there if you're ever interested. ProMax had a conference 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and you sat with HBO when HBO Go just launched. And for me, I was like, what the hell is HBO Go? You know, but now I know HBO Go.
Going to be everyone, HBO Max now.
Yeah, and now it's HBO Max now. And it's crazy because you don't think of streaming media, the next generation of TV and media being consumed through social media channels to push them towards those sites for subscription, mm-hmm. for et cetera, those eyeballs, those ears. It's, okay. I'm picking on HBO just because I just saw that video, but Game of Thrones, right? Everyone was like, ooh, Game of Thrones, or Netflix, ooh, Stranger Things. But you know what? Stranger Things, what, season 3 just rolled out, and they had the biggest rollout ever, right? But they did use a lot of social media to kind of push it out. I did see a lot on different social media platforms. So my question to you is, do you feel brands like Netflix, I'm not saying them, but them, are leveraging social media enough to promote and use that as a marketing strategy?
It totally depends on the category and the client. I mean, there are some major brands that I think are massively underutilizing it or are using it for more, I guess you could say, light metrics like fans or, you know, still buying likes or just trying to buy, you know, spark virality. I think at the end of the day, there are a lot of smart marketers out there. And if you look at a lot of the businesses that have come and just made huge splashes, and they would be ones like, especially, you look at a Casper mattress or a HelloFresh or even a Peloton. They started by first leveraging and really doing digital and social well, and now they're doing TV because they want to open up that funnel, right, and reach more audiences. But they started the opposite way, and those are digital native companies where you have a lot who have started the other way and they still love their TV creative. And by the way, I would never tell a client only do social or only do one thing, because once again, I said there is no one size fits all. I do think a lot of people understand the power of social now. I think some people think it is still something that is a add on because of its reach or, you know, because of maybe a certain audience it has and not an essential part. And the end of the day, what we talk about is, you know, and what I like to tell my clients is, if you're going to do business with us, it's not going to be because we have 2 billion users. It's going to be because I bring the best value for the dollar that you want to spend in that business objective that you want. If you buy me for reach, then I am stealing money for you, because it should be always about business outcomes. And that's what makes somebody not a vendor, but a partner. And I think TV can be great and it can work really good with digital, but I think social has an ability to do what I call the end factor, which is to get that engagement and spark conversation and to be able to get a mobile app download or whatever it is. And the entertainment marketers, like you mentioned, but I'm not going to talk about anything that they do specifically, they get that. And that's why they have so many different things they're trying to do through social, because each platform represents an opportunity to do something totally different for whatever objective you're trying to do. And that is not necessarily as easy to do on a platform like TV, because it is kind of about reach, right? You're not interacting with it. You're not necessarily getting a response from it. And I'm not picking on TV outdoor.
It's a one way.
It's a one way.
Traditional TV is one way.
And that's why I think that one of the most exciting trends, and I don't know what you're going to ask me later, but I think interactive content is going to be really interesting when they figure that out on TV. And if you can almost choose your own adventure, and like it really becomes as customized as a feed is. So anyways.
So can I
want to probably looking up my interview right now.
I want to cover though, like how is this dynamic working? Like let's say with a Netflix, okay? Yeah. Because Netflix.
You have to pick a different one, but yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
HBO Go is another one.
Okay.
Technically, they're a competitor of yours too, because you're both vying for content. You're both vying for eyes. You're both vying for people's time. You want people to stay on Facebook. You have Facebook Watch. You got these shows, but they need you. And we're in this very interesting time where I have to give my competitor money because I need to grow. But how does that dynamic work, especially on your side of sales? How do you convince somebody? Like, yeah, I know. We're your competitor, but we got the people, so we got the best bang for your buck too. Like,
I mean, the funny thing is, you mentioned Netflix. I mean, Reed Hastings will tell you that the biggest competitor to Netflix is sleep, because I mean, at the end of the day, time is the most scarce resource, and they're not making any more of that, as far as I know. So people are multitasking, but at the end of the day, that's you're right. I mean, listen, I call on news publishers. Believe me, some days. It's a fun conversation. And as we've gone more into the content space, at the end of the day, everything competes with everything, which is why you've got to figure out how you can both mutually gain what you need to do. And so I don't claim to have all the answers, but I do tell them, listen, if your objective is to try and have your content be discovered, to have it be differentiated so that people aren't Googling Big Little Lies Hulu, right? If you want to then have that content convert into a subscription, and then, by the way, your job isn't done, because after that season of Big Little Lies, people are going to maybe cancel and ditch you because they're now onto something else. So you need to then retain that person. Then that is something that we can do because of the time spent and the way people engage with us. And it does not mean that you can't still be successful and we can't be successful. But at the end of the day, we all want to basically bring value to earn people's time. And that's really what it comes down to. Because like I said earlier, the consumers are in control.
Yeah. I'm so like giddy right now because, okay, so when I think of Facebook, should I be nervous that you did the way you did it?
No.
No, I am of the age group that I still use Facebook predominantly versus other platforms.
I like how you said that. So that implies there are other age groups that don't.
Well, I'm sorry to say this.
All right, so use Facebook predominantly.
But okay, there's one particular individual that will tell me, Facebook, that's great, Auntie. That's great, Auntie. But we don't use Facebook. So how are you guys looking to capture that market? In your group is slightly different, but in general, I mean, we're maturing. Facebook is maturing, as any other business is going to in social media. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be like another reiteration of Facebook 2.0, or is it something that you guys just evolve?
I mean, I think I'm not going to speak to specific audiences, but I think at the end of the day, through our acquisitions, through the things that you see us doing on the platform, whether it's bringing more video, I mean, you look at even Instagram, right? Stories was not something we thought of when we launched Instagram. People started behaving in a way that led us to realize that, and then obviously Snapchat and all that came up, but like people wanted that ephemeral, in the moment kind of thing that they weren't getting because they felt like their Instagram feed had to be this beautifully curated experience, right? Like in the beginning, I was afraid to post to Instagram because I was like, I don't know if this picture is good enough to post to Instagram, right? Don't make those same choices on stories. I'm just like, heck yeah, I'm feeling that way, emoji. And so I think we just, as we looked through acquisitions and as we try new things, I mean, when we obviously Marketplace was something that opened up a whole another world to us. And now we have a huge share of the market on, especially on certain categories. And so I think you have to continue to just test and iterate. And that's what I tell my clients too, is like, there are no slam dunks. There's no silver bullets. There's no, I do one thing and it's immediately going to result X. And you have to continue to iterate. Video, I mean, mobile snuck up on us. Then we saw the video trend. Now you see stories. Messaging is huge. That's why we have WhatsApp, Messenger. And then you see things like IGTV, which we haven't monetized yet, but is bringing tons of short form content into the platform. And I think it's unlikely that any one platform is going to solve every audience. So the question is, how do you have a selection, a portfolio that allows you to reach as many people in as many different ways? Because not everybody wants to consume in the same way,
yeah,
even in the same day. So there might be a day where I'm sitting on a subway and I'm in a lean back environment, and I'll maybe go to watch, and I'll maybe watch, you know, Red Table Talk. And then later on, I'm scrolling through my feed, and in between videos from people's, you know, drunk July 4th, I maybe want to go look for some Rothy's. I mean, it just depends. And I think you have to be, that's the dynamic nature of the business, which is why content for marketing teams is so hard now, is that there is not one size. There's not even a, you know, it used to be that you had your TV spot and maybe six IAB standard digital display ads. Like, that ain't happening anymore.
So, okay. So I think, Aaron, I think you're on the same page on this, is we're talking about some major, you know, brands and corporations that you're working with. Can I ask you, then how does an entrepreneur compete in this
wild, wild west, essentially?
I mean, I think the opportunities for entrepreneurs are actually greater than they ever have been before, because it's easier to reach audiences, big and small, because of platforms like social and digital. The businesses that we have been able to help across the world that literally will tell us, I was able to hire because of what I was able to do on your platform. And, you know, we see, I get very US-centric in understanding, you know, like, and so I'm answering the questions like you just alluded to, which is no one uses Facebook that's under blah, blah, blah anymore. But
I didn't say that. I use it. I'm just saying the Gen Z.
But I answer those questions all the time. But we have a very US view. And, you know, the next billion people in the world are coming online are never going to have a computer. It's all going to be through their phone. And so what they consume, where they go to do it, is going to be very, very different. And I don't even remember your question at this point. I got so on a rant.
How can an entrepreneur get in and take advantage
of
this?
But I think it's because they can have a voice and they can have a presence. I mean, we have a lot of businesses that start on Facebook with a page or on Instagram and start doing it that way. And then they maybe get the money to do a storefront, or maybe they never do, or whatever it is. And I think that didn't happen before at all. And, you know, I think having the ability to reach consumers, I mean, they say it went from 6 degrees of separation, I think, to 3.5, is because businesses that seemingly had to just rely on what was in a 6-mile radius now technically can have access to the world if they want. Yeah.
So Facebook is, in essence, Aaron, you and I talked about
but
this.
But that's the internet too. It's not, I don't want to take credit for all that. A big part of that is the internet.
A big part of social media.
I mean, Amazon.
Too.
Social media. Like, but, let's talk about the A word, right? So Amazon changes everything.
Yeah.
Think about it. And some would say it's crushed the soul of retail, but I mean, you know, either way, the point is it gave a platform, right? We're talking about all these platforms that gave an opportunity for people who have a good or service or message or whatever to have that be distributed and heard. And that would have never, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we all got our news from like 3 broadcast networks.
Yeah. That's great. That's true.
Right?
I think you blew out some like minds here in the group.
I just blew out my own. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want to open it up for?
No, we don't. No. I have.
Well,
one.
I know. I could talk about this.
No,
all day.
No.
Like, this
I have
is
one
my jam.
Very
like,
specific one
stuff.
That needs to be on the podcast and recorded per an individual's request.
Oh yes. Okay. This is.
We skipped
come out
over
a lot
this
too.
Earlier on. Okay. So you guys pretend you didn't hear all that wonderful discussion. Let's just pretend we went back in time, Gwen. When you were in your formative 20 years, what do you think your life would be like if you took a job at Big Brother?
The show?
Apparently, someone had told me I need to ask you about you met Julie Chen and had the opportunity to work on Big Brother in your formative years.
It obviously meant more to him than it did to her.
I had a so for a long time, especially when I was at Sony, like a lot of our biggest hits were reality shows. And my parents were so disappointed in me. They're like, we sent you to school to go work on Ricky Lake. And I was like, yes. But that said, I think, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I was just in love with the entertainment business. And I mean, Big Brother was a big deal for a long time. Like, there was a lot. I mean, they were getting big audiences. Now, Julie Chen, and obviously that whole thing is a whole nother story. But at the end of the day, it would have been amazing because, once again, there are no wrong steps. They're just how you choose to look at them. So you can tell him that.
Oh, no, he's going to hear it.
Okay.
I did that for you, Steve.
All right. What do you got for me?
All right. Anything else? Let's close this one out and then we can open it for Q&A. So
thank you very much, Gwen, for joining us. You've been so gracious with your answers.
Thank you.
I'm bummed our time is up.
Wait.
Yes.
And that closes out for another episode for Innovation Calling Podcast, Women in Technology and Leadership. Thank you.